This is photographer Chris Orwig, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with none other than Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 31, when a family photo accidentally causes controversy. In this episode, a photographer shoots a controversial family portrait, sparking outrage. Sigma reinvents protective filters, but do you even need one? Kodak may be making a comeback. Sony saves you from having to buy a filter. Flickr reveals some interesting camera data. The FAA has an app to help camera drone owners. And listener Cal in Florida wants to know how to prevent wedding guests from ruining his photos. All that and more in episode 31 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Chris, for opening the show. Photographer Chris Orwig, author of The Creative Fight, is an amazing photographer and personally inspires me. His clients include Google, Adobe, Rolling Stone, and Esquire, just to name a few. You've no doubt seen his photography, and if you'd like to see what he's doing now, hit chrisorwig.com for more. That's chrisorwig.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 31 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Some photo shoot ideas seem like a good idea at the time, but then you do them and, well, people aren't as receptive to it as you thought they would be. Such was the case when Louisiana-based photographer Hannah Hawks posted a photo from a recent family portrait session in which the wife and two daughters have green tape over their mouths and their hands are seemingly bound by Christmas lights. As if that wasn't enough, the husband is holding a sign which reads, "Peace on Earth," and his young son is giving a big thumbs up in agreement with dad. Yeah, as you might imagine, this went viral with commenters from around the world calling it sexist, degrading, and promoting violence toward women. The photographer's post to Facebook quickly received thousands of shares and comments as people responded to this quite unusual family portrait, and most were not too happy about it. Twitter user Joanna Schroeder said, quote, "Photographer Hannah Hawks, we know that family isn't being abused in the photo. It's what the photo symbolizes that is so awful," end quote. Now, others posted with hashtag domestic violence and hashtag domestic abuse, and things really took on a life of their own. Hawks was taken aback by the outrage and posted a comment on Facebook which says, quote, "I would like to say that as a female, I do not and have never promoted violence toward women. I do not support abuse or the degradation of women. My controversial photo was taken by request by the family and was in no way meant to promote abuse. This photo was taken with humor in mind and was meant as a comical Christmas photo," end quote. I don't know what they were thinking here, but, you know, everyone has a different sense of humor, I guess. I think I have a pretty good sense of humor, but I don't know. This was a little bit iffy. Maybe it's a lot bit iffy, actually. Petapixel user Susan posted her thoughts on this, saying, quote, "This is why I hate social media. People get offended over everything, and now they have infinite platforms through which they can voice their worthless thoughts. It's a silly, slightly tasteless photo that in no way warrants this much outrage or attention," end quote. Okay, I gotta admit, I'm a little bit on the fence about this. You know, sure, it was in poor taste, and I can see where they were going with this joke, but perhaps they could have done something else. You know, maybe some things shouldn't be joked about, and maybe not tie it to Christmas. You know, we're an easily offended society. And hey, if I'm being honest, I allow myself to get worked up about stuff too. I think we all do. So for something like this, I defer to abuse victims and experts. If they have a problem with it, then maybe we should too. Twitter user WXBunny said, quote, "Knowing the life I survived, seeing people laugh at domestic violence and child abuse gives me little hope of change," end quote. You know, as I was prepping for this story, I had the photo up on my screen, and my 12-year-old daughter came over to talk to me and saw it. The smile on her face as she approached me suddenly changed to a look of sadness and confusion when she saw the photo. She was quite disturbed by what she saw on the screen. She wasn't expecting to see a mother and her two daughters with tape over their mouths and their hands bound. I wasn't thinking, of course, you know, it was not a good dad moment right there. I was prepping for the show and, yeah, I usually make sure she doesn't see things like that, of course, but I don't know, somehow I was distracted, but, you know, could have been a whole lot worse. I explained it to her and She still didn't get it. She's like, why would they do that, Daddy? It just didn't make any sense to her at all. You know, if a family portrait elicits that kind of reaction, then maybe it was an ill-advised idea. You know, I'm sure we could come up with a ton of clever, humorous ideas that would make for interesting family portraits. Ones that might offend. But I guess that's up to the family and also whether or not the photographer wants to be involved with it. And if they want to be part of a controversial news story. Personally, I'm not a big fan of protective lens filters. I haven't scratched a lens yet, and I was a working photojournalist. You know, we're hard on our gear. So if it didn't happen then, it's just not likely to happen. Not if you take precautions. In my mind, you're a lot better off using a lens hood than a filter. Your lenses were designed to be good to go just the way they are. Add a filter to the front of your lens and you're putting something else in the optical chain that wasn't meant to be there. Now, of course, sometimes you just must do it if you're going to use a circular polarizer, for instance. That's not an effect you can get later in Photoshop or Lightroom or whatever. So sometimes you need to use a filter. But for protection, I don't think it's necessary. Now, the back element, that is what you need to be concerned with. That is a lot closer to the focal plane. You will see dust spots on there, scratches, smudges, fingerprints, whatever. It's not the front element you need to be worried about. But if you absolutely must use a filter, Sigma has announced their ceramic protector, a lens filter that's the first to use clear glass ceramic material designed to offer more protection should the front of your lens take a direct hit. The company says these new filters are repellent and resistant against water, dust, oil, fingerprints, scratches, and shocks. So if you're worried about any of that, maybe this is the filter for you. Due to a special heat treatment, this new clear glass ceramic has a Vickers hardness number of 700 HV and is 10 times stronger than traditional filters and 3 times stronger than chemically strengthened filters. They're 50% thinner and 30% lighter than Sigma's current filters, and according to Sigma America President Mark Amir Hamza, quote, "The new clear glass ceramic protector is the first of its kind and the strongest material used in the industry. It will enable photographers to safeguard their lenses while maintaining the impressive sharpness offered by high-quality glass." End quote. When they're released, these new filters will be available in most popular filter thread sizes from 67 to 105 millimeters, and pricing and availability has yet to be announced on them. They're not likely to be cheap, of course, and certainly not as cheap as a lens hood. Those can be had for $10 to $20 or so. Not a big deal. Let them take the hit and your lens won't. But how you choose to protect your lens is something that you as a photographer must decide. Personally, I'm on Team Lens Hood. That's worked for me for many, many years. Back in 2013, Petapixel wrote about how major filmmakers had banded together in hopes of rescuing Kodak by committing to purchasing film from the once great company. One of those filmmakers was J.J. Abrams, director of Star Wars: The Force Awakens, which is out now in theaters. That movie was shot entirely on Kodak film, and thanks to a number of other major productions using Kodak film as well, the company says that it may be profitable sometime in 2016. Rochester's Democrat and Chronicle reports that Abrams used 65mm film for Star Wars Episode 7, and that Episode 8 will be shot on Kodak film as well. Imagine how much film they must use for a Hollywood movie. Tons and tons of it. Kodak CEO Jeff Clark tells The Hollywood Reporter that Kodak has gone from losing $100 million a year in its film business to breaking even the past three quarters of 2015, with 2016 looking like a profitable year for their film business. Amazingly, 700 people are still employed by Kodak's film division. Who knew? Most in the Rochester, New York area where Kodak is based. Now, thanks to hipsters and those who are nostalgic for the film days, film is making a resurgence, so we'll see where this leads. I'm by no means anti-film. I'll be 45 next month. You know, I grew up on film, but I love the instant gratification of digital. If I need just one photo and need it now, I'm not going to be shooting a 36 exposure roll of film, taking it to get processed, and then waiting for it to be done and then making prints from it. That just doesn't make any sense. You know, film is something that these days you use because you want a certain look and you want to slow things down and take your time. And that's not a bad thing. It's just not for me. If you have an iOS device and use Adobe Lightroom Mobile, you may be interested to know that version 2.1 of the app adds a number of new features that photographers will really appreciate. First, if you own the ginormous iPad Pro, you'll be happy to hear that it's been optimized for the mega tablet and the new multitasking functionality in iOS 9. The Tone Curve tool now has a sweet point curve mode, which gives you full control over the curve and direct access to each of the color channels. That's something that before this could only have been done in the desktop version of Lightroom. There's also a new split toning tool for adding tints or tones to the highlights and shadows of your images. And for those of you with a new iPhone 6S or 6S Plus, there's 3D touch functionality, allowing you to open your camera directly from the Lightroom home screen and more. But perhaps the coolest feature in version 2.1 is the ability to preview and capture photos in real time while you apply presets. So you'll be able to see what the photo will look like before you even capture it. And since it's non-destructive, you can remove the preset from the photo if you don't like it and apply another. You know, we live in exciting times, I tell you. The tools we have available to us as image makers that we didn't have just a few years ago is quite amazing. If you have an iOS device and want to try this out, you can download Lightroom Mobile version 2.1 for free in the iTunes App Store. What happens when you drop a Sony A7R in lava? Well, you know, a lot of Nikon and Canon fanboys would like to make that happen. But anyway, the same thing that happens when you drop any camera into it is what happens. Very, very bad things. Imagine you're shooting, presumably over some lava, for who knows what reason, when your camera falls into it. Now, maybe the heat would dry the tears before anyone notices, right? That's what I'm thinking. Seriously though, ouch. That would be painful to watch. And let's hope the photographer had insurance, because those things are not cheap. If you want to see the photos, hit the show notes for this episode. It's horrific. Today's listener question comes from Cal in Florida, who emailed his question to me at lensshark@gmail.com. Cal asks, Sharky, I've been frustrated with wedding guests ruining my shots as they lean into the aisle as the couple is approaching. Their smartphones, or heaven forbid, tablets, get in the way and completely ruin what should be precious memories, and later I catch heat like somehow I could have prevented this from happening. What should I do, Sharky? How can I tell guests to refrain from doing this without upsetting my clients? Because doing nothing isn't working either. Help. Thanks so much for your question, Cal. You know, this is a tough one, brother. I think it starts from your initial meeting with the couple before they hire you. It's important to educate them, I think. You know, you're a team with the goal of getting the best possible photos of one of the most important days of their lives, and you need for them to be on board with this to help make that happen. I would start by showing them photos that you shot of weddings that went well, and then show them photos of couples coming down the aisle as guests lean in and ruin your photos. When they see those, they should be concerned about that and want to help prevent that from happening. You know, one thing people do is mention on the wedding announcements that they would appreciate if people didn't take photos at all during the wedding, and then that's why they've hired a professional. But of course, a lot of people, especially family members and people that have traveled a long way and spent a lot of money, are going to want to take pictures of the event. But hopefully, they won't lean into the aisle. If the couple isn't willing to go so far as to tell everyone to not take photos ahead of time, they'll hopefully be okay with telling guests to at least not lean into the aisles or hold up tablets, which may block your shots from various angles. Many photographers, with the couple's written permission, and that's the key part there, to get it in writing, will post signs at the entrance to the church or wherever else the wedding is taking place, announcing what the policy is. As a photographer, I think it's important to spell this out in your contract explicitly. You simply cannot take photos of the couple coming down the aisle, obstruction-free, if there are actual obstructions in your way. It's just not going to happen. So if this happens to you, by all means, continue shooting and cover your butt, because those photos may very well be evidence should the couple ever sue you. That is definitely going to help your cause. You need to be able to show that you made every reasonable effort to get the shots that you needed to get, and that people that obstructed your view prevented that from happening. I think that having that information in the contract and having signage, and don't forget to take pictures of those signage at the event as well, so you can prove that they was actually there, and taking photos of the couple coming down the aisle being obstructed will all help you if you do indeed get sued. And hopefully that doesn't happen. We want to prevent that from happening to the extent that we can, right? There's only so much that you can do, and the couple needs to know that up front. They can do their part to help make sure that things go off without a hitch. Now, of course, you can't control what other people are doing that are guests there at the wedding. That's on them, but at least you would be off the hook. However, if things do go south, it's cover your butt mode. You want to make sure you're protected. They want those key photos, and you need to show them that it just wasn't possible. So thank you so much, Cal, for your question. I greatly appreciate it. A ton of people still use Flickr. But even if you're not one of them, you may be interested to hear which camera brands are used the most on the photo sharing service. And some of the stats are pretty surprising, I think. The Yahoo-owned company recently released some data it gathered from the massive amount of photos that are uploaded to it and found, not surprisingly, that 39% of photos were from smartphone cameras, 31% from DSLRs, 25% still from point-and-shoots, and just 3% from mirrorless. But as readers noted on Petapixel.com, Flickr seems to have an interesting way of determining what's a point-and-shoot and what's a mirrorless camera, so who knows how accurate those numbers actually are. As for brands, it found that 42% were from Apple's iPhone, Canon DSLRs made up 27%, and Nikon just 16%. Now, that was data from 2015, but what about the past decade? A lot has changed in the photography world since 2005. That's an understatement, right? According to Flickr, quote, point-and-shoot cameras continue to lose share to camera phones, and SLR has had a 1% per year growth. Samsung's growth stalled in 2015, while Apple raced to the top as the most used camera brand on Flickr at the beginning of 2015, end quote. The data shows that mirrorless has been growing at 1% per year as well. That's not too bad. As for specifically which cameras make up the top 20 in 2015, the top five are all iPhones, from the 6 to the 5S, the 5, the 4S, the 4, and then the 6 Plus, in that order. After that, the Canon 5D Mark II is the top DSLR with 1.9% of all photos taken in 2015. Then it's a mix of some other smartphones and some quite old DSLRs. You know, it always amazes me when I see the Nikon D90, a camera which is now over 7 years old, make the list at number 14, the 14th most popular camera on Flickr. That just blows my mind. Nikon sold a massive amount of those things, and apparently a ton of their owners are pretty active on Flickr. The service also found that a healthy percentage of its users actually use more than one camera brand, with some of them owning a Nikon and a Canon. For instance, of those who use Canon as their primary body, 14.21% of them have a Nikon as their second body. For those who shoot Nikon primarily, though, 16.18% have a Canon. In case you're wondering, those who primarily shoot with an Apple device prefer Canon by nearly 4 percentage points over Nikon. In fact, of everyone who shoots with something other than Nikon or Canon as their primary body, all of them actually choose Canon over Nikon. You know, I find that pretty interesting, I must say. If you're a Sony user who shoots landscapes, but you don't own a graduated ND filter, it's okay. There's an app for that. Available now in the Sony Play Memory Store for just $10, Sky HDR is designed to replace the graduated neutral density filter that you might have been eyeing before by making it easier to capture the correct exposure for the bright sky and the darker landscape below, all in one shot, in camera. It has a few themes to choose from and also has a couple of custom slots for saving your favorite settings. According to Sony, choosing blue sky expresses the blue sky, sunset expresses the redness of dusk scenes, and graduated ND shoots an image with only different exposures. In the app, you tell it where the horizon line is, and then from there, you tell it what exposure you'd like for the foreground as well as the sky. When that's all set, you take a pic, and then you have a photo which would otherwise require a graduated ND filter and/or tinkering in Photoshop or Lightroom, etc. You can also independently adjust the white balance, shutter, and aperture for the two portions of the frame, so that's really helpful as well. Now, some criticize Sony for charging for things that they would like to see built into the camera, and that's fair criticism, I think. But you know, $10 for an app that does it at a fraction of a cost of a more expensive graduated ND filter is not that bad. And hey, if you forget your graduated ND at home, or you just don't want to bring it with you, you can do that right there in the camera with this app, and I think that's pretty handy. That way you at least always have it with you. Now, if you're interested in this app, it's available right now in the Sony Play Memory Store for just $10. That's really not that bad of a deal when you think about it. If you're a camera drone owner in the United States and you want to keep out of trouble, the FAA's free Before You Fly app may be just what you're looking for. Sure, there's Air Map and Don't Fly Drones Here to show you where you can't fly, but those are web-based interactive maps. This is an app. Before You Fly, currently in beta testing since May of 2015, is a smartphone app that the Federal Aviation Administration is hoping will instruct drone owners where it's lawful to fly and also help educate as well. FAA Administrator Michael Huerta says, quote, "While there are other apps that provide model aircraft enthusiasts with various types of data, we believe Before You Fly has the most user-friendly interface and the most up-to-date information," end quote. Now, in addition to telling you where you can't fly, like within 5 miles of an airport, there's also a planner mode that assists you with planning future flights in different locations, so that's pretty handy. There are interactive maps with filters, contact info for nearby airports, and links to other information that's put out by the FAA. 1,000 beta testers have been putting this app through its paces for months now, and with hundreds of thousands of drones expected to be given as gifts this holiday season, and countless others already in operation, I suspect that we're going to see this app come out of beta sometime in early 2016, and it's going to be available on iOS as well as Android. You know, I wonder what percentage of drone owners actually know about the 5-mile rule. Now, technically, you can call the air traffic control tower at the airport, and that's why the phone numbers are in the app. And you can seek permission to fly. But do they actually say yes? I haven't heard of anyone actually calling the airport and asking for permission. I can't see them rerouting jets just because you want to fly over your neighborhood. That just seems kind of doubtful to me. We just moved to Idaho about a month or so ago, and sure enough, I'm within 5 miles of the airport. So no flying for me in the backyard. Now, mostly because I don't own a drone. You know, that's unless Santa or my wife, which is kind of the same person. Well, she's half of Santa, I guess. Unless she gets me one, I don't think it's going to be happening anytime soon. So stay tuned. But if I get one, looks like I'm going to have to drive about a 30 miles or so. I know. I should bring a canteen with me. That's going to be a big, arduous journey, but I think I can handle it. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 31 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show, or you can give us a call at area code 206-333-9308. Now, if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 32. Well, it's f8 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.